Today is the 50th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision that denied states the power to regulate abortion. This decision was based on a basic right of privacy. The Britannica website says that, quote, the court held that a set of Texas statutes criminalizing abortion in most instances violated a woman's constitutional right of privacy, which it found to be implicit in the liberty guarantee of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, which reads, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So, like many other legal and cultural traditions and decisions in the US, abortion is a matter of personal freedom. For those of us who believe in and value body autonomy, this anniversary should be a cause for celebration. But the 2022 decision on the Dobbs versus Jackson case overturned Roe v. Wade, saying that, quote, the Constitution makes no reference to abortion, and no such right is implicitly protected by any constitutional provision, including the one on which the defenders of Roe and Casey now chiefly rely, the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. I want us to pause for a moment here. Take a breath. The topics of pregnancy and abortion and bodily autonomy are sensitive and emotional, and they have touched or will touch many of our lives. I want to acknowledge that each of our experiences and feelings are our own, that they are true for us, that we don't have to share them and we don't have to agree, and that I'm here to process with you after the service if you find yourself activated by what happens in the sanctuary today. I was at our General Assembly in Portland, Oregon, when the Dobbs decision was announced this past summer. I was blown away. Of course, I had heard the leak, but in the logistical and emotional enormity of the prolonged impacts of the COVID pandemic on me, on my people, on our congregation, I had taken my feelings about that leak and put them into a box, put them over here to deal with when I had to. And so at GA, I had to. I was surrounded by Unitarian Universalists, and we did all the things you use do when hit by a big thing. We let the news sink in. We cried. We talked. We prayed. We sang. We protested. We held each other. And we promised each other we would commit resources to the health and safety of people with uteruses. And many of us focused on what we could do to help provide access to abortion. I invite you to pause again. Take another breath as you remember where you were, what you thought, and what you felt when you heard about Dobbs. So, Unitarian Universalists affirm and promote seven principles, which are a statement of our values based on our theology of love. You can find those principles in the front of the gray hymnal and on a framed poster somewhere in our building. I forget where it's hanging. It might be in a hallway. I'm going to focus on the first and seventh principles today. With this topic, the inherent worth and dignity of every human being, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. These two principles kind of bookend the other five, and for me and many other UUs, they are foundational for the whole set. There's an old religious education program that has this image of the first and seventh principles here, and the rest of them kind of form an arch over them. That is often how I think about them. At our best, Unitarian Universalists live our lives in the tension between those two principles. The first is a reflection of our culture's emphasis on individual freedom. And the seventh is an acknowledgement that we're inextricably bound to each other, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. When taken together, the both and nature of these two principles helps us center in the understanding that we are free beings who are at the same time responsible to one another. So my colleagues and other UUs have said a lot of things about choice and agency and access, and I'm going to draw from their words a lot for the rest of what I have to say because they are rich, and often other people say things better than I can. This next piece, then, is from the Reverend Rob Keithan, from a sermon he gave his congregation about the 2015 Statement of Conscience that we heard Eva read from. Reverend Rob writes, "One evening, I found myself in a bar in a small town in western Pennsylvania coming back from a trip to Ohio. It was a Monday night, so it's me and two other guys at the bar, plus a handful of people at tables. The bartender was a white woman about my age, fairly outgoing. She strikes up a conversation with me that eventually comes around to asking what I do. I take a deep breath and I say, well, I'm a minister who works from a faith perspective to support access to sexuality education, contraception, and all forms of pregnancy-related health care, including abortion. It feels like there's an eternal pause, you know, which I'm sure was only a few seconds. But she stops what she's doing, leans over the bar, and looks at me very closely and says, thank you. Thank you for doing that work. See, I got pregnant when I was in high school, and my Catholic stepfather told me that he'd kick me out of the house if I had an abortion. I wanted to go to college, but now I'm here with two kids, and I'm trying to give my daughters the best sex education I can so they don't get stuck in the same situation." Reverend Rob continues, "And so the reality is that the Roe v. Wade decision didn't help her at all. It didn't mean that she got a good sexuality education. It didn't mean that she had access to the most effective forms of contraception or the self-esteem that you often need to make healthy decisions. And she didn't have actual access to abortion when she needed it, thanks in large part to religion." That's the justice part of reproductive justice. The right to abortion is hugely important, and it's consistent, I believe, with our first and seventh principles and the tension between them, and we need to keep fighting for it. And it's not the only thing impacting people with uteruses that need to be fought for. This next piece is from the Congregational Reproductive Justice Action Guide that was produced by Uplift Action, our UUA's LGBTQIA+ gender and reproductive justice campaign. They write, "Sister Song, the largest national multi-ethnic reproductive justice collective, defines reproductive justice as the human right to maintain personal bodily autonomy, have children, not have children, and parent the children we have in safe and sustainable communities. A reproductive justice framework understands that a broad scope of social and political issues impact a person's ability to exercise agency over when, how, and if they choose to give birth, have children, and raise their families, gun violence, white supremacy, environmental racism, trans misogyny, healthcare access, mass incarceration, domestic violence, immigration and family separation, labor rights, and more." They continue, "Reproductive justice is intersectional in its roots and approach, seeking to identify and address multiple intersecting oppressions that impact access to care. Rather than seek to provide only choice for individuals, Reproductive justice seeks to ensure access for everyone by addressing various barriers to care and resources that go beyond legislation. Reproductive rights and health strategies have often left people of color, disabled people, and queer people without access to the choices they seek to provide. Reproductive justice seeks to direct the strategy and movement beyond legality to accessibility. They continue, we know that the criminalization of reproductive health care and transgender health care are part of a shared strategy to strip multiple communities of their bodily autonomy. By approaching reproductive justice with an understanding and commitment to its relationship to other forms of oppression and care, we expand our understanding of what comprehensive reproductive health care truly includes. So you can find this and lots of other information, including what individuals and congregations can do to support reproductive justice work on the Uplift Action section of the UUA Side with Love website. For the last part of our exploration, I'm going to use the four human rights articulated by Sister Song as the definition of reproductive justice as a guide. So the first three, the right to maintain personal bodily autonomy, the right to have children, the right to not have children, are resonant with the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Now, this is the part of reproductive justice that is about choice. It's not a leap from inherent worth and dignity to the idea that we all get to make choices about our bodies. We get to decide what to do with our bodies. Who can touch our bodies and how, and whether and when we want to carry and birth children because our bodies are ours. People of color have endured both forced sterilization and forced pregnancy and birthing. And because they have inherent worth and dignity, they have the right to choose what happens to their bodies. People with uteruses who don't identify as women or who don't look like women have been left out of the conversation about reproductive choice. And because they have inherent worth and dignity, they have the right to have their bodies seen and heard and cared for. The fourth right, to parent the children we have in safe and sustainable communities, is as resonant with interdependence as it is with individual worth and dignity. This is the part about access. If we are bound to one another, then do we not have to support each other's right to inherent worth and dignity? That means that we work to build a world where everyone has enough of what they need to thrive. You have heard me say that sentence on just about every justice topic that I have preached on. It's because they're all connected. Food, water, housing, a stable climate, physical and mental health and healthcare, meaningful work, visibility, connection, safety, freedom, peace. Access to these things allow people with uteruses to have real choice, not just legalized choice about our bodies and whether and when and how to have children. It needs to be legal to make that choice, yes. And it needs to be possible. If you are going to this afternoon's national mobilization on Madison, the Women's March rally that begins at 1 o'clock at the Capitol, or if you're going anywhere else after this service, I give you a final quote from the Congregational Reproductive Justice Action Guide to take with you. Our Unitarian Universalist faith affirms that all bodies are sacred and that we are each endowed with the twin gifts of agency and conscience. Each of us should have the power to decide what does and doesn't happen to our bodies at every moment of our lives, because consent and bodily autonomy are holy. And when disparities in resources or freedoms make it difficult for certain groups of people to exercise autonomy over their own bodies, our faith compels us to take liberatory action. May it be so. May we be so.